Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Game's premier podcasting trio. Today, we are down a man, as Riley Hulbert sadly cannot join us. But you get to hear an entire episode with Andrew Mahone and myself, JW Kriwal. Andrew, how are you doing this morning?
Doing just fine, but probably not as good as you, my friend, hot off your regional win in Toronto, the third regional you've won. Chop chop, baby. Congratulations. Chop chop.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, it was a long time coming.
Yeah. I mean, looking at your Limitless profile, I'm looking kind of post-pandemic. We're talking the 2022 season, the 2023 season. Yeah, man, I don't think you top 32 to single regional. And then now we got a fourth place and a win back-to-back events.
Where you been? Come from? Yeah, well, you know, the other seasons, like I had said last week, was it last 2 weeks ago? Whenever, yeah. I top forward, whatever.
That's history at this point.
Well, I had spent a lot of those seasons on the sidelines, you know, cheering, yeah, you and Riley on, right? And you guys were having great finishes. And I was, you know, again, like, not taking anything away from that. That was awesome to watch. And it's just, again, I think we have a really great team mentality where it's like, if one of us succeeds, then it feels like we all succeed. So that was really great to watch you guys just, you know, dominate. Obviously, you at Worlds this year, like, it was cool. And I, you know, I certainly had a great time, but can't help but feel that I, not say I deserved anything, but kind of felt like, okay, when's my turn. And
exactly,
back-to-back tournaments with extremely fantastic. I mean, frankly, like, getting one of these spikes in a year is like, okay, that's, you know, a really good season, I'd say. And then to have two top fours, one converting into a win, I'm just ecstatic.
You should be. I mean, that's two medals, obviously a large sum of money, but then also just, I mean, that's not really what it's about. The pride, yeah, of knowing that you still have what it takes to be at that level as a competitor. And I think that, you know, being a longtime seasoned Pokemon player who now is like entering different walks of life, you're a father now, you're a married man, you've got a full-time job, you know, and being able to continue to succeed at those different points in your life is a very big deal, because not everybody can, not everybody does. But then also you start to wonder yourself, like, at this point in my life, do I still have what it takes to capture a win, right? And those kind of thoughts, you know, will come and go. But to be able to prove it to yourself, like, heck yeah, now is my turn. Here we go. That must,
yeah,
be great.
It's great, right? Because, yeah, yeah, you talk about just the different responsibilities that we have in life, and to come in and smack around a couple of young guns and, you know, people that got a little bit of time on their hands, and to come in and say, hey, you know, maybe you should listen to the old heads. You know, we still got things to prove and things to show. I'm just really excited for the way I can represent certain people in our community, particularly Poke parents that may not have the time to test, may not have the time to go to a ton of events. Because I was looking at the rest of my season post top four, and it was like, well, I could try to make it to this tournament, but that gets kind of tough with my wife. Obviously, she's pregnant. We're expecting our next child here. And just like, well, Indianapolis, that would be like 2 weeks before the due date. Like, do I risk
gotta have
it,
you priorities, know? Man,
yeah, yeah, no, for sure, yeah, exactly. And it's so it was amazing to get that win, so that now I can focus on those other responsibilities. I have this weight off my shoulders, and that's not to say that I'll be completely absent from tournaments from here on out, but it just means that I don't have to, and not that I was prioritizing them over family, but you understand, like, now I don't have to even really think about them if I don't want to.
Yes.
So
it doesn't weigh on you. I get it. And it's, yeah, like, you know, as you kind of age and grow into different responsibilities and things like that, you never want to go out on a, you know, you don't want to fizzle out, you know, into irrelevancy. Like, that's, That's not what any competitive person wants to do, you know? And as you start to pile up more and more responsibilities to be able to prove to yourself that you can do it, right? That you can have a healthy work-life balance and still be a top Pokemon TCG player is a huge win, not just for you, but as you said, for parents everywhere, for people with partners everywhere, for people with families and lives. Last year and the years after the pandemic, frankly, felt a little dry for us dads out there. Not that I'm a dad, but, you know, whatever. I'm 34. Might as well be.
Might as well be. That's so true.
Yeah, I'm 34. But it, you know, it was feeling a little dry. And honestly, a lot of the top teams in the Pokemon TCG, the mean age of those groups was maybe 20, 21. And it started to feel like, you know, are we just aged out? Are the kids too powerful, right? And that's like a, no, seriously, that's a thought that I've had, bro. Like, it certainly creeps up on you because kids got a lot of time, man. They got a lot of time.
They got a lot of energy. They're staying up late. They're grinding.
Right.
Whatever platform.
Yeah, yeah. Don't care what platform is. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it was a big win for all us old heads out there and important. And, you know, and I'm thankful. I mean, you won with your toes out, bro. Like wearing some daddy looking sandals,
hey,
bro.
Listen, the one thing that I'm never going to do in this game is apologize for who I am or try to hide who I am. Right.
Nor
that's just,
you.
And I'm, you know, the way that I handle myself, I feel like is emblematic of that. I'm just not going to sugarcoat who I am and try to be somebody that I'm not. So absolutely, the sandals are,
I know,
100%, dude. 100%.
Part of the fit, bro. I get it.
That's right. I had my, I just ate a whole bottle of ketchup shirt on underneath. If you look at the VODs, you'll see that
they made me
cover up with the yellow. I know, because they asked me if it was Pokemon official, and I went,
no.
I'm like, well, it is a slogan in your game, but
right.
They did make me. I would have totally worn that on stage, but they.
I know you would have.
So
of course.
Yep, but that's a bummer. But it was just—it was quite the run. Just a really just fantastic tournament all around. Great players. I ran through a gauntlet of players. There were fantastic players. Day one, I played four. Day two competitors. So. You know, it was just incredible, like just the level of competition that I had to go through to come out with the win.
Yeah, that was very impressive. I saw your PokeStats live, you know, feed of your run. Now, tell us a little bit about. I mean, we sat down before this podcast, and it was like, wow, I felt like we just did this podcast where, you know. I was like, okay, you know, you're going to walk us all the way up, you know, from your beginning of your tournament all the way up through top four. Now you got one more round.
So true. Yeah. And I feel like I redeemed myself from the top four match. Lost Box is always hard, but I felt like I let myself down with my play in that top four match. Just, there were things that I could have done that I didn't do.
You got stomped, bro.
And I did get stopped, right?
You got stopped, bro. Yeah, it was ugly. I had to turn it off, like I said. Like, you don't want to.
Yeah.
And then to have your run end on camera like that, you know, you had unfinished business, bro.
I did have unfinished business. I did. So, yeah, my run was fantastic. It's kind of funny, though, because I lost in top four against Lost Box. And then I said, you know what? Screw Lost Box. I'm not losing to it again. I didn't lose to a Lost Box in my Toronto run. So I ended up tying Aiden Koos, who was a day two, I think top 32 finisher with his Lost Box with double bravery charm. Where is this coming from, you guys?
Dude.
Absolutely insane. It makes it like impossible to deal with the Dragonite if they can ever get a bravery charm. I know, it's crazy. And then I played against Dylan Gunn, who was the eighth seed in top eight, and I beat him in round 12. I played against Dan Irish, who was a day two competitor with Lost Box, beat him. And then obviously my first match in top eight was against a Lost Box Gudra deck that I ended up winning against. So I was 3-0-1 against Lost Box. And I think that's, you know, pertinent to talk about the changes that I made from the Peoria regionals to Toronto regionals. Largely, the Maraudon deck is going to stay mostly the same, especially if you're playing the Path variant, which I opted to do. I figured Path is just going to be all around better, and, you know, maybe we'll see an increase in Charizard. That's kind of like, okay, Path or no Path, well, how much Charizard do I expect? I still expect maybe about 12 to 15% of the meta to be Charizard, and so opted to keep the Paths in. But the biggest cards that I included in this list, or at least kept, I kept the Mew. I felt like that had really good utility for potentially pulling off the Greninja play. That rarely happens, but it's at least an option. It gives you an out to Mimikyu, funnily enough. Did happen to play against one of those stall decks on stream. That didn't go particularly well, but we can talk about that in a little bit. And then it also gives you a bit of draw power in the late game against the decks that want to Iona you, most notably Charizard, Gardevoir, Lugia, those kinds of decks that are just trying to get you out of the resources in hand that you need. So Mew is a really good card again this this tournament. And then the other big card was the Collapse Stadium. So I think moving forward, Collapse Stadium is going to be a staple in my list because it was just so versatile. Against the Lost Box decks, you need a way to counter their first attack. The best first attack in the game is Raikou. The second best first attack in the game is Cramorant. And if you can deny them a, you know, essentially an extra turn by removing from the field your damaged Pokemon that had taken a Cramorant hit, then you've gained that extra turn. You've gained that advantage. You've put their prize map in a wonky position. And so the collapse was really, really strong for me, you know, most notably in those Lost Box matchups.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and that's always like a fear playing Lost Box. If your opponent just heals something, like if you're working on something and they heal it, it's a game-winning play. And, you know, having another option, obviously you have switch carts can negate some damage, but then just to have another, you know, tool at your disposal to negate that damage. I think seeing that be the difference maker in a matchup that I frankly never thought was as bad as people said it was. People always say, like, oh, you can't beat Lost, but like, you can. You definitely can. And I have, and you have. And, you know, I can't speak for too many other testing groups, but in our group, we do. You know, it sometimes can get hairy. And it sometimes goes your way, but it all depends. The bravery charms do on the other side do make things a little bit more tough for us, but then obviously with playing things like collapse can make things a little bit better. So it feels like it's this cat and mouse, like, of both decks just trying to accommodate for each other. And then I do feel like your play, you know, your play at Peoria, or was it Peoria? I'm tripping. No, Peoria, yes. Your play at Peoria certainly must have helped and informed your play at Toronto. I know, you know, being able to go back-to-back streaks with the same deck, did you feel confident? I mean, at this point now, you've been playing Maraidon. Talk to us a little bit about what it feels like right now to be just jamming the same deck. Do you think that this is something that you know, we had predicted at the beginning of the season, like, you know, top players are jamming the same deck and it's working out for them. Now we're seeing that come to fruition with our own testing group. What are the implications of that, and how do you feel about that kind of working out?
Well, one thing that it was just really interesting when you bring this up is, like, my mind immediately goes to, like, my level of knowledge of the deck is probably much more than, I mean, it's certainly much more than the casters. And that's not to put them down, but just like there were like plays that they were like, oh, you have, you know, they are going to do this. And then it's like, no, that's really not the best play. Just again, having that knowledge, that intimate knowledge of the deck, you know, even if they're looking at it from that 1,000-foot view, like can't quite see maybe what I'm seeing in the game. And then certainly my opponents had, you know, just it's not a matchup that they maybe gave a lot of credit to. So, you know, I and that's not to say that anyone misplayed, because again, you look at the gauntlet of players that I played, and I mean, they were all on top of it, played very well throughout the entire tournament. And so, you know, you just have to think like, well, maybe they also didn't have like the intimate knowledge that I had with the deck. So I think that there was a lot of benefits of playing that deck, because we kind of got to evolve it all the way back from Worlds to where it is now. I do feel like the list that Jesse and I played, we were one card off, but it was just a ball card difference. He played two Nest Ball and I played the four Ultra Ball and one Nest Ball. But ultimately, I think that list that we settled on was what I would consider as close to a perfect list as I've made, like post-COVID. And had answers for every single matchup, and you know, you had a game plan for everything that you were going to go up against. So I felt like to be able to bring that deck from where it was, which is a great list for Worlds, I think, to where it is now. I mean, just being able to make those minor changes and know that they're going to help us, like the Super Rod change that we made, and cutting the one energy and cutting the one Raichu. Like, you can only really understand that you only need one Raichu if you've played hundreds of games with the deck, I think, right? Like, I don't think that many players are coming to that realization on their own without having the experience and tournament play, you know, that we had had. So certainly think that it's really valuable for players right now in this format, given how diverse it is, to have their, you know, backup deck, their deck that they just know inside and out, and, you know, really get those reps in with that.
I agree, and it's certainly, you know, has worked out for us. I do think, you know, it's funny, you players and teams get on kicks, and you know, we're probably seen as the Maridon group right now. I have to imagine it's just what we're jamming.
Is there a better performing deck out there, though? I mean, tell me a better performing deck.
I know
of the tournaments that we've gone to, right? It's like, it's in my eyes, it's the best deck of this format, like, and I think the results are there.
Well,
at least close. I mean, certainly now, Lost Box is you know up there, but
yeah. Now, I mean, you can make a case with your win. I mean, certainly, you know, you can make a case. Before that, it was a lot of, well, you know, it's got this one. Well, it's got this one. I think that it's certainly with your win, Maridon has asserted itself as a top deck in this format, and you know, what I would say it's a top three deck, and for me, I kind of trace Maridon all the way back to Seijin Park, really. I mean, Seijin Park just kind of putting it out there, right, and everybody just looking at it and being like, that's not real.
Right? Yeah, when he won in Korea, I think.
Yeah, and you know, and that's such a wild thing. You know, you see that win, and then to have it actually kind of show up at Worlds, and then my goodness, what a takeover at the regional level, not at Lille for some reason. They don't rock with the ride on over there. Yeah, I don't know, man. And then on the West Coast,
Well, it's because we didn't go. So.
Well, you know, you're certainly making a case for yourself.
No, it's not about
Lugia
that,
doesn't like, stand a chance when JW is there.
I did play five Lugia over the course of the day, and so
well, that, okay, so pretty good. And so, like, not to inflate your head a little bit, you know, but I'll inflate your head a little bit. You know, every one of those Lugia that you beat in top cut in day two, those are Lugias that, like, could have won the event, you know, if they don't have to play against you with Maridon. Like, frankly, those are all. And it's like, when you're at that point in a tournament, one match can make or break. And that's what I was so frustrated last year. And I had a pretty good season, but so many top 16s, top 32s.
Yes.
And those, the difference between those and having a shot to win it. 1 point, it could be one game. It could be one game out of a best of three. And it's just it felt like I was right there. I was in striking distance every single event. And it sometimes it's just a matter of I played J.W. Kriwal with Maridon, man.
Right. Yep. Yep. And I was the yeah. hurdle that the hero couldn't go over.
I know. But to get your third regional win, what's that feel like? Is this one, I think, different than your other ones? I do believe this is the first regional you've ever had broadcast by the Pokemon Company International.
That is true. That is true. Yes. So that's the first one. That's the first modern era standard tournament, right? Because the last regional win was an expanded. This was the first regional win of, I don't know, more than 1,000 players, right? Because you look at the Richmond regional, and I want to say that was hovering 900. Around, 900 or so. So still pretty sizable, but then you double the size of the tournament for this one.
400. 400.
I was thinking it was like 500. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, 405. Yep.
Okay. Great. Okay. Great. So pretty small. My first regional was the first of the new kind of day two Swiss rounds. So that was kind of cool. And then you cut to a top eight. That was the first time that had ever happened. And I won that tournament, but still hovering around, that 300 to 400.
Yeah. And that's just what regionals all used to be.
Yeah. And I don't know that necessarily takes away from that, because there were still a lot of great players playing back there.
Your percentages of like experienced players back then, if there's 50 experienced players at a 300 player tournament, like you're playing them.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, Primal was still playing back then, you know?
Yeah.
Right? Like, so. Still had Azul was still playing back then. Yeah. Great player. So, So, those are some of those, differences. But to do it here, kind of first modern era, first kind of, I don't know, mega tournament, if you think about the length of time that I've played and where I've, the level of regionals that I've played versus where they are at now, these are just unbelievable tournaments and just massive, massive, massive tournaments. So it's cool. I mean, I know that I join a short list of players that have won three tournaments. I was already on a relatively short list of players that had won two. And if somebody has that, three player list, I'm looking for it. Just curious on that. But yeah, it feels really great. It feels just like you said earlier, that I can still do it, that I can still contribute to our group, that I'm still, it felt a little, a little sad again last year being what I felt like on the sidelines, and how impassioned I was, like, oh, our group's
it was out. Coming out. It was coming out. Yeah, it was coming out. And me and Riley were looking at you like, hear you, but we're like I earned my first stipend this year ever, then ended with the top 32 worlds, which my second world's finished. So yeah, my goodness, I think you certainly made up for lost time. So yeah, I think it's tough. You always, people always ask what kind of season would you rather have? Would you rather have, three regional wins and like kind of a sparse looking resume otherwise? Or would you rather have, just constant top 16s and top 32s? And I'm taking the regional wins every time. I would rather have the wins. I know, because why, JW?
Because history remembers winners.
Thank you. I was looking for that quote in your winners interview, and you didn't deliver.
I missed my opportunity. There were many things that I wanted to say in my winners interview that just got away from me. So,
because, I've heard it, and I'm pretty sure you delivered the line in Richmond, right?
I did, and I didn't save that winners interview. Because that was, I think, that could have been a goated, best interview of all time. But that's lost to the Twitch VODs.
We looked for it on YouTube. It's not anywhere.
It's not there. Nope. There's actually video evidence. There is a clip on Tablemon's channel of that regional. And it cuts a little bit early. It's kind of funky, but there's maybe 45 seconds or so of the regional.
Just proving that you were there.
Proving that I was there, that it was me. Yeah, yeah. You can see me, I think in that one, I was so excited. I knew I was going to win, and I, forgot to play a supporter on my first turn or something. It was, really funny. I made a misplay on that turn. It's, and now I'm exposing myself to the audience, but It was just enough to show my incompetence.
No deck list errors this time. Smooth sailing. No using Arvin for just a charm. Yeah. I know. You know, good stuff. We smoothed it all out.
It was a really good ride. I felt very in control, very in command of the deck the entire day. And, you know, we talk about the strengths of Maraidon that I think a lot of players don't acknowledge. And that is that I'm going to be playing more Pokemon than my opponents. And that's pretty much what happened for the entire day, where it was like, okay, one game out of the three, my opponent just did not set up. And I was able to either capitalize on that by like making plays, you know, boss plays or, you know, big Raichu plays on their only main attacker, whatever that happened to be. I was able to capitalize on that. So they just never played one of the games. And then it brought it down to like a best of two where I just had to win one. Like it was like very much like that throughout the entire day, where there were just one of the games in a best of three. My opponent did not set up. And that was very consistent, be it Charizard, be it Lugia, be it Gardevoir, be it, you know, anything else. And then it brings it down, like it shortens the game to where that match is only, you know, you only have to take one out of two games because their deck just fizzled out one of those games. So, you know, again, I think Maraidon's strength is, you know, certainly it has linear gameplay options, but you're going to be playing and, you know, making those options more than your opponent because their deck just doesn't function as well as yours.
And I think that that's something, you know, when people argue decks and argue Pokemon, they always are arguing with a like on paper mentality, like my strategy's working every time. But what I'm trying to hammer home, especially on stream, I mean, just talking about the decks and talking about like, how is Maraidon good? Why is Maraidon good? You know, on paper, yada, yada, yada. On paper, yada, yada, yada. Is the way I play it out in my mind, yada, yada, yada. But like, I just drill home. Maraidon is more consistent than any other deck in the format. It's more consistent than your deck. And it's fast and it's disruptive. So like, when you add those three things, it's the most consistent, fastest, most disruptive deck in the format. It's like playing against a football team with good defense. It's like, you know, it's not, you know, maybe the most attractive way to win games, but it wins games. And it's and you can't underestimate that.
Yeah, and the thing I like about Maraidon is that, it wins games, so it wins those dirty games. It wins those really grimy, ugly, just attack games, you know, and we all have them no matter what deck you're playing. But in those decks that have to evolve, in those decks that have to set up a bunch of combo pieces, it can be a lot harder to win those games where you just have, you know, energy and attackers. But Maraidon thrives off that. Really, you don't have to hit generators. I try to hit that point home. Like, people bring up like, why is Maraidon bad? Well, all the games are, you know, come down to generators. That's not true. And especially if you watch some of my streamed matches, you'll see that I am not very successful on generators, and yet I'm still able to produce the results, still able to take the wins. My brother, I think, said it best. Will, I got to give you a shout out for this. He's saying, you know, Maraidon has electric generators, and there's that kind of search for the top five, and that can make or break a game potentially. But in many other decks, there's also this generator mentality that people don't really want to acknowledge. You think about Gardevoir. Like, how many times can a game be great or horrible based on the top six of your Mew? Like, you win or lose based on the top six of your Mew, right?
All the time.
You know, you win or lose based on the top five of your Colress.
Yeah.
You know, there's just all these decks are, you know, whether or not you draw Arvin and Charizard, it's like we're all playing the electric generator game, but you get to dunk on Maraidon for some reason because, you know, it's that singular action and it's attaching energy and it like just feels so bad to whiff. But like, we're all playing that, whether it's Mew, whether it's the Colress. There's a lot of these kinds of, well, let's just see what we got in the top cards of our deck and see if we can make it work. And I think a lot of people don't like to acknowledge that.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. And then kind of additionally, every other deck in the format is playing this let's find the battle VIP pass game, right? And Maraidon doesn't have to play that. So that's like another thing that, you know, Maraidon just doesn't have to worry about. And I do agree. I think people just like to dunk on Miranda for whatever reason. I think people, the general view of it is it's a simpleton deck.
I took that personally.
It's a simpleton deck for noobs.
My $15,000 would like to have a word.
Your $15,000 don't frankly care what you think about it. Like, why would they? But there's always that in the Pokemon TCG, and this isn't new. Your beat stick decks, you know, your aggro decks like that, it can always, you know, get that kind of flack from people who like to play, you know, more convoluted, more complex strategies. But sometimes, you know, are you a better player for working harder to win the game?
Right. You know, and it is funny too. Like you looked at some of, if you were watching some of my matches from, you know, from the weekend, the mental gymnastics that some of these players were going through to like just produce a simple attacker was crazy. You know, and here I am, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I got a Greninja, and then I got to play my battle VIP pass, and then I got to go here and here and here and here and here. And then, you know, I can make a meme about it, but like I'm on the other side and I'm just attach, knockout.
I gotta say, attach, the
knockout,
the mental, the lack of mental wear playing Maridon for a regional two, is fantastic. You know, having played Gardevoir at NAIC and then pivoting to Maridon, it's so much easier to stay like mentally on top of every single thing that's going on in your deck.
Yeah.
Because it's
funny, yeah. Because I took notes on this. So here are my round lengths.
Yeah. This is interesting data.
Here are my round lengths. This is the amount of time that it took me to take two games on my opponent or win the series or whatever.
Win the series,
Round one, 15 minutes. To win the best of three. Yeah. Round two, 25 minutes. Round three, 35 minutes. But I arguably threw game two, but she made a really great play. It could have been over, I think, a little bit quicker. But that's neither here nor there.
Still, 35 minutes is 15 minutes shy of 50. That's still nuts.
I know. Let's see. Round four was a full game because I was playing Urshifu. Ended up losing that one. Round five, Colorless Lugia, 15 minutes. Round six, 35 minutes. Round seven, 15 minutes. Like, these games were just over, man. Like, it was just boom, boom, boom. Like, let's get on to the next one. I could refresh. I could play some Pokemon Puzzle League on the Nintendo 64s that they had set up in the hall.
Oh, my God.
It was great.
Yeah. And you can see, I mean, you go into day two feeling fresh and confident and excited about your deck because you're just sitting there and, you know, just knocking people out, lights out. That's fantastic. And I think that's a big deal, not something to underestimate with, you know, with the actual physicality of playing the game, right?
Yeah, there could be a lot, especially, oh man, those chairs were extremely uncomfortable. But, you know, what's not uncomfortable is, I mean, I think this is a perfect time for our ad read. Thank you so much to our friends over at Manscaped for providing some of the finest in men's grooming. Every man knows how scary it can be when going for a close shave below the belt, and that's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. They are one of the premier, in my opinion, men's groom care company, and they have all of your electric needs, all your like electric grooming needs. Andrew, why don't you tell some of the people listening at home about what they can expect from Manscaped products?
A couple products that we love here on the cast, the ear and nose hair trimmer. I know JW is super privy to that one as
you didn't see any ear or nose hair on the stream,
no,
did you?
No. Yep, and that 4K HD camera work. Not a hair in sight from the nose or the ears. Love to see it. I'm a big fan of the lawnmower myself with a nice handy light so that I can see in all of those dark places down under and get a nice close shave.
Absolutely. Love it. Yeah. So you can head on over to Manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM for 20% off plus free shipping. It's what regional winners use. You can head on over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout. You're going to get yourself 20% off plus free shipping. Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. So we can take a look at some of the matchups that I played.
Let's do that.
I think that, you know, this tournament was, again, just one of the harder tournaments. If I talked a few weeks ago about my Peoria run being a little bit on the easier side, this one was nothing like that. So by day one, I ended up playing against three Lugias. And a couple of those were single strike Lugia. Played Reagan Retzloff in round six. Reagan ended up getting 11 wins, 33 points on the day. So made it into that top 32. And then Zach Lesage was my round seven. Aiden Koos, we talked about earlier with the Lost Box that had the two bravery charm. Oh my gosh, dude. Somehow pulled out a tie in that matchup, which I was stoked about. And then James Cox to kind of round out for like a nice palate cleanser in the last round on his Gardevoir deck that he's played, to my knowledge, nonstop since that archetype's been released. So,
and he's a grinder. Know, because he streams. You know, yeah,
he does. Grinder. Yeah, well, he and it was really funny. Yep. It was really funny because I was talking to James, and if you've ever watched James play in real life, like he is a man possessed. He is just like flying, and I think part of that is because he knows like he's just got to go fast with Guardy, right? Yeah. And he's one of those players I was talking about earlier where he's just like going through all these hoops to like try to come up with the optimal play, and like he's doing it, he's making the optimal plays, but he's just expending all of this energy to go through it. And I'm like, I talked to him in one of our games. I'm like, hey man, you're doing all that, but like you could just be playing Electric Generators and playing Maraidon like me. And he kind of laughs and he chuckles. And, you know, I miss a generator, and throughout my tournament runs, I've been, you know, whenever I miss a generator, I'm like, bad card. And he looks up at me and he's like, you know what? That's funny. I've been thinking that the whole time too. So we had some nice little banter.
Love the banter.
Great opponent. Certainly highly skilled, and was able to take that in a very tight series 2-1. You look on my day two, started off day two against Charizard. Not a matchup that I like to see, a matchup that is navigable, but I do feel like as the Maraidon player, Charizard is one of the matchups that you get a little bit scared about. So I've had a few people ask me like, what do you do to navigate the Charizard matchup? Well, you try to go a quick Raikou. If you can weave in a Zapdos, it's kind of the same strategy that you would go for in the Gardevoir matchup, where you want to get, you know, that quick knockout. You want to prioritize that above all else. And then if they are forced to KO a Zapdos, that can be really good because that potentially unlocks your Mew EX to do 330 at the end of the game. If they, you know, go a one prize knockout and then two prize knockouts to go to one prize remaining, then you can do the Mew attack for 330 and potentially knock out a Charizard. But that's not really what happened. Both games in round 10 were just a little bit awkward for my opponent. I think first game he was able to get that big Charizard up and I was able to take it down, and then he just didn't have a response. And then game two, he didn't have much of a setup at all, and I was just able to pick off the Charmanders as they came down to the board. Round 11, I played against Gabriel Smart. So Gabe was, you know, on the single strike Lugia deck, and he, if I remember correctly, went first in game one, got just a really great setup, and I wasn't able to find the bosses that I needed to. I didn't really, couldn't piece together much. And then in game two, again, I'm misremembering, but I don't remember that I started with a Maraidon, and my setup was just really kind of awkward, and I was struggling to like get attackers. And I ended up bringing it down to that last prize, but he found his urns and was able to get the win there. In round 12, played against another Lost Box deck in Dylan Gunn. That was the top eight He finished in the top eight, eighth seed, and very tough matchup. I mean, the Lost Box decks really just come down to whether or not you can utilize the Collapsed. I think, again, like Collapsed in all my Lost Box matchups really put in a lot of work because, you know, you could tell that, okay, he's going to smack in with the Cramorant and then try to pick off that Maridon or pick off that Raikou later on in the game. But if I can just get that one turn of Collapsed, that really sets him back. And not playing the Kyogre, you know, certainly is difficult for these Lost Box decks. The round 14 opponent, I played him on stream. This was a tough one. And it's funny because I think, like, you listen back to the commentary and I completely agree with Pablo, where he says, go for the Zapdos, go for the Zapdos. I 100% in retrospect agree. I should have just gone Zapdos and pretty much nothing else if I could have avoided it. Like, maybe I get out my Free Retreaters. Maybe I get out a Flaffy. I don't know. But the funny thing is I played a stall matchup in the Baltimore area, the Ellicott City Challenge.
Okay.
And my strategy was to just get one Mew, try to get Mew as my main attacker because that can knock out the Snorlax and also the Mimikyu.
Mm.
So I was just thinking, okay, I was like tunnel visioning into Mew as my only attacker.
Mm.
And that's what ultimately got me into trouble in the first game, just kind of ran out of steam. And then got a quick donk in game number two, which I desperately needed. And then
probably a long game one, huh?
Yeah. Well, it was about, I don't know, I want to say 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to execute this strategy, like of attacking and winning, like I just need to go second and, you know, hope something good happens and just really, really motor. Yeah. So I could have tried to play out game one. I could have maybe even played game one to a tie, but it just didn't seem that likely. So I figured scooping was the better plan.
Thankfully
took that tie in round 14, because if I had lost that match, there was no chance at a top eight. So heading into round 15 against Grant. So Grant was playing the Charizard deck that Azul and Caleb and their group was playing. So I was really excited to play Grant. I sit down at the table and Grant is like, really kind of like, you know how Grant has that very, I don't know, stoic demeanor.
Yeah.
I feel like he always has this kind of like stoicness about him when he plays. He like takes the game very seriously and he's always in the zone. Well, I sit down and he looks kind of depressed. Like, I don't know, just kind of a slump show. I don't think it was for me or anything. I'm like, but I just ask like, hey man, what's wrong? You know, cause we have a good relationship, you know? And I asked Grant like, hey man, what's wrong? He's like, it's just my RBF, my resting B face.
Yeah. That's just his game face, baby.
That's his game face.
Yeah. That's just Grant.
That's just Grant. Exactly.
That's just Grant. Yeah.
So the first game was the best use of the super rod that I had all day.
Okay.
And that's not to say that it was bad the rest of the tournament, but it was the best use of it. So what ended up happening in that game is I was able to take a quick knockout with the Raikou, and then I was able to follow that up with a Zapdos. Grant thinks that I just played the Zapdos without a rod, so he knocks it out with an Entei and fills his bench. I have the rod in hand. Like, he thinks his Entei is going to be safe, right? That I need to find a boss or something, or I need to find a Raichu. And a Raichu at that stage of the game is just a waste of energy resources. But I have the rod in hand, so I recycle the Zapdos. And since he has a full bench, it's a much easier knockout because I just get it back out with the Maridon and then attack with the Raichu, or excuse me, the Raikou for... you know, fill my bench and do 230 exactly. And for only two energy, I don't even have to like do it with Maridon. I don't have to go out and with Raichu. Like it was really sweet. And he, you know, clearly wasn't expecting the super rod there in that situation and got heavily punished for it. That was his only real attacker. At that point I had gone up, you know, he had taken one prize and I had taken four prizes. So I just needed to go through one Charizard and I managed to either do that or like gust into a Lumineon or something. I forget exactly how that game ends, but I'm able to take the win. And then in game number two, I mean, his deck, like, again, this is like, frankly, like his deck kind of bricks. So he gets to a situation where he has about a 6-card hand and he has to do all these mental gymnastics to get the one of Charizard attacking. So he has to do things like, I think he played Arvin for the stone and the Ultra Ball. And then he had to like Ultra Ball to get a Lumineon and play the stone on the Lumineon to get a rare candy. And he like plays his whole hand down to like one or two cards to get one Charizard. And in his mind, and I think if you looked at the board, you would say, yeah, that Charizard is at least going to get him to the next turn where he can try to find more things to set up, more Charmanders to set up, and he'll be fine. But what he didn't know is I also had an Arvin play in my hand.
You were about to hit double Jennies.
So it was a little bit nicer than that. So I on my side of the field, I was attacking with a Raikou. He had swung into, I think, my Raikou for 180 or 210 or whatever. Maybe I'd already taken a knockout. I forget exactly. But I started my turn. I had, I think, the Raikou active and nothing else. I hit a generator for 2. So now I have 4 energy in board, and I'm like, oh man, I still like, I don't think I can reach to this Raichu knockout. But I have 2 Flaffy down, and I have an Arvin in hand, and I have an energy. So I'm like, okay, I'm trying to piece it together. I'm like,
and doing I have a couple other gymnastics.
That was like the hardest turn of my day, because I'm like trying to figure out, I'm like, do I have enough resources?
JW doing math.
Yeah, I know. Can I get to 6 energy in play?
What I'm gonna need to do is just hit another generator.
But I didn't. That's the thing. I had 4 energy in play, so I Arvin for an Ultra Ball and a Seal Stone. The Ultra Ball gets 1 Flaffy. The Seal Stone gets the other.
Yeah.
And then as I'm like making this play, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so stupid. I am gonna have to go for a generator because I only have 1 energy in the discard pile. But since I have an attacker in the active, I realize, oh, duh, I'm going to retreat that attacker to the bench and I can just dynamotor it back on. So what ends up happening is I lay the Raichu down, I attach the energy, I have both my Flaffies up, so I just Flaffy once. I have no energy in the discard pile, but 6 energy on board. Retreat the active,
dynamotor again. Yeah.
Raikou, dynamotor again, and then blow up his only Charizard with 6 energy. And that was, I think, the play of my tournament. Because, yeah, I knew after that, like, there was
lights out.
Yeah, it's lights out, right? Like, if you go up by as much as I did at that position of the game, then, you know, there's really not a whole lot that the Charizard deck can do. So a convincing 2-0 over Charizard. I don't think I dropped a game to Charizard. And I will point out that my round 10 Charizard was the Curlia Gallade version, which is less susceptible to path. So that was like, again, like I just felt really cool. Felt really good about the deck heading into the top 8. So, you know, quick little recap. I mean, you guys saw top 4 and top in the finals match, but the round 16 was against Hermanni from Finland, and he was playing the Gudra deck that he had gotten top 8 at Lille with.
That's right.
And so that's back-to-back top 8s for him. And he played it, I would say, like from my perspective, he played it flawlessly, where he tried to only use single prizers, because I think he understood that if he dropped a Gudra and it got gusted up, that he could just get hard punished for that. Or if he tried to attack with it midway through the game and I had Rope Boss, he would just get hard punished for that, and there was no winning that. So he tried to play a one prize game. He played the Zamazenta. It always felt like whenever he was attacking with Zamazenta, he always had the Lost Vacuum, because that Zamazenta is doing 220.
Hit the knockout. Yeah.
Yeah. And just taking the knockout every time. And it's like, oh dude, he played 1 Lost Vacuum, and I swear he had it.
Oh my God.
I swear he had it every time he played the Zamazenta. And then I remember that game goes to time. On my turn before time is called, I'm able to collapse away my Raikou that has, I think, 170 damage on it. So it had already soaked up a couple of attacks from the Cram and like a Sableye.
Maybe you switch card. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it had soaked up a couple of attacks. I'm able to collapse it away, thank goodness. And then I'm just able, like, he is forced to tie the game on, because he's turned 3, So he's forced to tie the game by Sableye sniping a Zapdos and go down 3-3. And then it's just next prize wins. And I have the energy to just knock out the active Sableye. So pretty exciting top eight match. That definitely would have been one like that I wish people would have saw, because it was just really back and forth. And then you look at the top four match. This was single strike Lugia. Christian opted to go second, which is actually a really interesting strategy. And it's hard to say, like, I feel like this is where we're at in the format right now is we don't quite know whether or not we want to go first or second in some of these matchups. Like, we still haven't ironed that out. I think there are pros and cons to both. Christian opted to go second to get a better start. Obviously is playing the Stonejourner in a single strike Lugia deck, so he can shorten the game if he has that optimal turn one start. Of getting both Lugia down, which is easier after you play a supporter. If he can get into double Archaeops, then he can force it to where, you know, he forces me to have boss, you know, like after going back, through the basically. Stonejourner. Yeah, kind of back to back, right? So I think it's, you know, again, I don't think I can fault him. I think I still do want to go first as the Maridon player, but you know, that was just his strategy. And you guys saw kind of what happened there on the stream, where I had a little bit of a brick in game two, but was able to take control in game three. And then the finals match was
double brick, baby.
I mean, it was double brick. I mean, you know, he had
prize
plays
two Ralts, and then, you
well,
know,
but
found
see the prize.
Ralts,
I don't know. Trouble. I don't know. The prize two Ralts for me is like, I saw a lot of Twitch chatters talk about, oh, you know, Demetrius's start was so bad. And I'm like, well, what about me? Like, I missed two generators, bro.
Yeah. For
like,
sure.
Where's my, you know, like, is
that's
anybody
the thing
talk?
Is that Maridon, you know, is just a more consistent deck. So, like, it doesn't need as much.
Yeah,
so,
and like, I can punish those, you know, I can punish those start, right? Because he prized two Ralts and a Curlia, right? So, like, there are plays that he can make where he can go Mirage Step, which he did, right? And try to get into his guys. But, you know, unfortunately, I just put on a little bit too much pressure. He was forced to attack with the Zacian, and that is always a death sentence with the Gardevoir deck. And I knew as soon as that Zacian came down, I was like, yeah,
oh,
like,
yeah, it's
I
over.
Win.
Yeah,
you know,
I
like,
win.
I just can't.
Oh, we're trading two for two here? Like, okay.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what I would love to do. Yeah, thank
yeah,
you.
So, yeah, please. Thank God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was great. And then in the game two, the fly.
It was symbolic.
I think it was.
That's when you swatted the fly, I mean, like, I knew the region was yours when you won game one, frankly, and saw his start game two. I was like, oh, sign the slip, bro. Like, sign the slip. When it was one Ralts turn one, sign the slip, bro. Sign the slip. But then, like, obviously the fly was symbolic. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, that was a great, great moment for me. Terrible moment for the fly. But
game ender.
Game ender indeed. Yeah, I mean, it was I had known when I had taken the third prize and he hadn't put on any pressure, I was like, oh yeah, this seems like very reasonable for me to win this game. Like, I think I'm put myself in a great spot. I don't think I've made any, you know, errors that my opponent could take advantage of. You know, I just felt like I had played very much like by the book and exactly the game plan that I wanted to heading into that Gardevoir matchup. And then when I took that fourth prize, that's when I knew, where it was like, there is
no way,
unless I announce an attack wrong, or if I draw an extra card, or if I do, you know, play something under path that I shouldn't, like, there is no way for me to lose this game just based on, you know, routing of
all I have
to
do is say attack twice. Like, he can't not do it, right?
Yes.
So unless there is like unless there's a triple prize penalty or something, you know, it's not happening. Yeah,
exactly. So that was just, it was fun to, it's fun to be in those situations. You know, be it at a regional level or at a league challenge. Like, for me, I just really love like being in that, you know, you're going to win, you know, you have everything set up, you have kind of a checkmate scenario set up like that. It just was like very freeing, and I could just, you know, focus in and take it down.
Yeah, man. Well, congratulations. It was a lot of fun. You had a lot of fans in the chat cheering you on. That was awesome to see. And I think I personally love the theatrics. Okay, I think that stuff is fun. I think it's all in good fun. I don't see enough Pokemon players having fun, frankly, and doing their own thing and being themselves, right? Like, obviously, you know, I'm not as much of like a, you know, I'm not the type, nor are you, to celebrate, you know, like Connor Fenton did when he won his, frankly.
I'm not going to pop off, probably.
I'm not going to pop off, no. But that's who Connor is, and that's okay. Yeah. And we got to see, like, that's Connor, right? Cool. But I think getting to see your personality come through and your win, that's fun, right? You get to learn more about the person and the competitor, you know, based on how they, and then theatrics, I think, is perfect for you, right?
Yeah. Well, so you know,
tell us about the chop chop. What is that? Why were we chopping? What's going on here?
Yeah, the chop is a just keep chopping mentality. It's don't let anything get in your way, and if something does get in your way, then you just keep pushing forward, just keep persevering. It's like, you know, basically my entire run post COVID. It's like, did I get the finishes? No, but I still showed up to work. I grabbed my hard hat, I got my lunch pail, I put my work boots on, and I went and did the job, and ultimately chopped my way to victory.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. It really has been amazing getting to kind of see your arc here. I mean, it feels like just the other week, you were giving us the pep talk, like, we're not living up to our potential as a team, right?
I know.
And there's a lot of that questioning whether or not we could get there, and actually, you know, for you to finally get there and kind of quiet all those doubts is awesome. And it's been inspiring, I'm sure, to a lot of other players, but absolutely to me.
Yeah, man. Well, the work's not really done, man. I want it to keep going, bro. Like, I want you to have all this success. Like, as I take kind of a step back, just I won't be going to LAIC. There's a few of these other regionals that don't really make a ton of sense for me to go to in terms of travel. So, like, I am so stoked to see where the group heads and, you know, to be a part of this, because I think it's already been a very special season for, you know, certainly for Jesse and I, been great. Right. And, you know, you obviously coming off that world's finish, but like, you know, want to make that as, you know, holistic of a season. Like, if we can just keep this rolling,
I know,
you know, you and Riley and Zeely and, you know, the rest of the crew, like, if we can get some more finishes, like, that's all I want. So I'm hoping to be able to, you know, cheer you guys on, help you guys test, get more finishes here in the future.
I'm hungry, man. I want a Nats finish. I was telling Natalie.
Yeah, bro.
I want a Nationals finish. Having been to the top eight of a national tournament and not getting a trophy, I feel like I have unfinished business. So, like, that's really what I got my eyes set on now. You know, I'm probably going to go to all three this year. And as I kind of enter, you know, my next, you know, kind of era as a competitor, I think, you know, I have my eyes on a big finish like that, like a regional win or an international top cut. That's what I want. And for Worlds right now, I kind of feel satisfied, like, for myself right now. I've got a Worlds finish, and, you know, Worlds is going to be on a case-by-case basis for me, but I'm just going to continue going to the tournaments and doing the things that I'm excited about. And for me right now, I'm really amped up and excited about these regionals, these international championships. I've never been to South America. I'm very excited about Brazil. I'm very excited about this new format. You've inspired me, man, and I feel like I'm hungry now. I feel like I'm going to put in the work and just keep chopping, man.
Yeah, just keep chopping. That's the whole mentality. Just keep chopping. We're going to keep using that. Keep chopping, keep riding on.
Yeah, ride on with my riding.
That's right. It's all about that.
So is there anything else that you want to say or shout out to punctuate this podcast? I think that's been a nice little recap of your run. Obviously, not quite riding off into the sunset. You do have your Worlds invite punched already, which has got to be the fastest Worlds invite you've ever had.
And I mean... There was one season I won a regional in my first season that I won a regional. I didn't get an invite. I was like, you know, 3 points short or something. Like, it's absurd, you know. I digress. That's a whole other thing. Long story there. But, man, does it feel fantastic? I didn't think I would be the first one in the group to have the Worlds invite. I thought for sure that was going to be Jesse, but, you know.
Me too.
And he's fine. He's chilling. He's like 20 points away.
20 points away.
You know, whatever it is, right? He's chilling. He's got like 8 months left or something. But I know. Yeah, if that is a huge weight off my shoulders, because I was so stoked to like, oh, when Hawaii was announced, I'm like, wow, that would be so cool to play. Like these locations recently, I mean, Yokohama, Japan, Hawaii, places that I've never been. They're a little bit exotic, new, different. And I'm like, wow, that would be just fantastic to like grind out the whole season and then earn that invite and be able to play in Hawaii. And now to have that achieved, that goal achieved so early in the season, I am like relieved. It takes a weight off my shoulders. I feel like I'm a little bit more free with like what I'm allowed to play at tournaments. Like I can roll up to my locals and just do what I want because it doesn't really matter. And that's like very freeing. And I hope that that is, you know, now with my perspective now, like helping the rest of the team, like I hope that that brings a unique perspective where it's like nobody's kind of, you know, I hope my third eye has been opened and I can, you know, see things like I'm a little less safe, right? And I'm a little more like, let's experiment and here's what I've been trying that's kind of weird and new and you guys should try it out. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, in terms of shout outs, like, man, I got to give all glory to God for this one. Like, geez Louise, he has taken me through some, you know, dark mental spaces with, you know, again, we're talking about finishes and, you know, do I think I can still compete at this level? So, you know, just praise God for this win. And then I have to give a huge, huge shout out to my father who, ooh, I started playing Pokemon with. You know, this is my biggest finish. I'm just like really proud of it. So I want to give him some credit too, because he's where it all started. Just us playing with Pokemon cards on the kitchen table. So that's really fun to go from that to being on a officially produced, you know, tournament and winning the whole thing. Like, that's just so fun. And then of course, shout out to my beautiful family, my beautiful wife, and my beautiful baby Harper, who I love so much. And I hope in, I don't know, 15, 20 years, when she listens back to all the old content that her dad produced, my digital footprint, she'll realize that I loved her a lot. And that, you know, I hope that I make her proud.
It was really special getting to see you, hug your brother Will after the win. I mean, just the production, man. Catching that moment, that was big.
That was big. A good one. So, that was his third tournament. So, you know, shout outs to Will. Like, I think that was a really cool thing that, you know, we got to experience together, right? He was, I you know, not going to say like he was my only friend there. But, I mean, you know, normally a lot of these times where people make deep runs, like, you know, you got to catch a, you know, somebody's got to catch a flight, or people just got to get back to their lives because they got to travel 8 hours.
Monday, bro.
Yeah, they work on Monday and it's an 8 hour drive back or something. You know,
it's so, like, I love you, man, but I'm asleep 8 hours tonight.
And I get, and like, that's better. There's no hate.
It's
there.
Part of
like,
the deal.
I get it, right? Yeah. So, but to have him there, you know, to celebrate, and I took him out to a nice steak dinner after the dub, you know, that was just a really, really nice moment. So yeah, shout outs to Will for being there, and hopefully, you know, he gets his chance too.
For
someday,
sure.
You know,
well, congratulations again, JW. Obviously you make us all very proud, bringing home a win for us 30-year-olds, for the dads of the world, for Tag Team Podcast, and your third win, obviously putting you on a very special and elite list of three-time regional champions in the Pokemon TCG. So huge congratulations to you. You're an inspiration to us all. And that's going to do it for the cast. Thank you all so much for listening. You can find us on X at EnjoyFriend, E-N-J-O-Y friend for myself, and at RealJohnWalter for JW, and then Tag Team Podcast for the cast.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all so much for listening. Catch you on the next one.
See ya.